Yo, 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 what's good, everybody? What's good? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. We're back. So, I know I dropped an emergency pod. I call it an emergency pod after the Cowboys lost, but I'm here to review. We're going to go over Wild Card Weekend and so forth, the matchups, my takeaways, and we're going to look a little bit into Divisional Weekend, a little bit, not too much, because I think I'm going to put together another separate, like, episode dedicated towards that. But shouts out to everyone that is listening in full effect. You guys know why we are here. I hope everybody enjoyed Wild Card Weekend and so forth. Games were, you know, we had some pretty shocking upsets and some, I would say, humiliating losses. And yeah, like that NFC playoff picture with the games we have set for the divisional rounds, kind of interesting to see, and so forth. Got a first year quarterback. We got Baker Mayfield, who, I mean, he's won a playoff game with multiple teams. Pretty awesome. So we'll talk about and dive into everything. First and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kip, the Isaiah Kip Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Shouts out to everyone that is continuing to help grow the pod, sharing the pod on, different social media platforms, whether it's Twitter, aka X, Instagram, so forth. You know, you guys can find us anywhere, everywhere on any streaming platform. And yeah, let's get into it. So, obviously, and I'm going to start on Monday night with the Eagles, embarrassing loss. I'm going to say this before I get into all of these games. I think some key takeaways I took away from this weekend's past wild card games. First was organizational structure matters. I know it sounds cliche, but organizational structure matters. With the structure and how functional your organization, it just matters. Like I said, we had some collapses. We had some collapses in the wild card round. The Cowboys had a brutal collapse, and I know people poke jokes at the Cowboys. But that kind of felt like even a loop. That felt like a new low for the Cowboys. And then Philly just absolutely collapsed. And they were a car that was leaking oil, and it just never got fixed. We were aware of Philadelphia's problems, right? We were aware. I think one portion was like, man, this is who they are as a team. It's not looking too good. Another half was like, huh? I mean, maybe they can get something together once playoff time hit, and we see the result of that. So, organization structure matters from the top. I look at the Lions. I know the Lions, huge weekend for them. They get their first playoff win in 32 years, I think. That's huge. Like, absolutely, absolutely phenomenal for them. But I think when we talk about front offices, we don't usually talk about, like, we don't bring up Brad Holmes. But Brad Holmes has done an excellent job with not only drafting, but, you know, picking the right coach. You know, Dan Campbell, obviously, hiring Aaron Glenn and hiring, obviously, Ben Johnson. I don't think we talk enough about, like, Brad Holmes, the GM of the Lions, and what he has been able to build and so forth and so forth, right? Organizational structure, it just matters, right? Packers, a lot of people, Brian Gutekunst, I think they do leave some room for error in terms of, you know, they've been critiqued over the past few years. Matt LaFleur, there was some question marks coming into the season, like, hey, was it Aaron or Matt LaFleur? They have done a great job with the development of Jordan Love. They have the youngest, the Packers actually have the youngest team to make the playoffs since 1977. So they're the youngest team to make the playoffs since 1977. They're the youngest team in the league this year. So a lot of learning curves, and they find themselves in the divisional round. So organizational structure matters. The second key is, and this is kind of like a, you know, this is more playful, but The Kyle Shanahan tree. Kyle Shanahan tree, for the most part, had a good weekend. I.e. Matt LaFleur put on an absolute coaching clinic versus the Cowboys. And just had his way schematically, game planning wise. He was just running circles around Dan Quinn and Mike McCarthy. And then, you know, Bobby Slowick. Obviously, Houston, they have just been phenomenal, and they've been on a phenomenal run. CJ Stroud, I mean, awesome. The kid has been awesome all year. And, you know, Bobby Slowick, Nick Casario, I forgot to mention Nick Casario, right, in Houston. He's their GM. He's their president of ops. So, yeah, like, great weekend for the Kyle Shanahan tree, I would say, right? That's just that. That's just some keys of the weekend that I found interesting. Let's move on. Let's go to Philly and the Buccaneers, though. Let's get to that. So the Eagles get destroyed by the Buccaneers on the road. Huge collapse by the Eagles. To finish off their last seven games of the year, they lost six of their last seven games of the year. They lost 33-9. And obviously, like, I'm gonna get Tampa Bay and, you know, give them some props, right? But, like, this Eagles thing, man, the Eagles reminded me. You guys know how you can have one small problem, and then you just, like, since you deem it a quote unquote small problem, you just let it go, and it's like, you just shrug it off. Right. And occasionally, sometimes small problems can generate and populate into either a bigger problem or there's a multitude of problems. And the Eagles, to me, they was like their season and how it progressed and their problems. You know, obviously they had defensive issues. They, like, their secondary was atrocious, and it was at no point this season their secondary was never good, right? From the start of the season all the way to the end of the season, that was the Eagles' problem. Their secondary was never looked upon as a good unit or a strength of theirs. It was always a weakness. But then from that problem to other problems like offensive issues and play calling and Jalen Hurts and so forth and Nick Sirianni, that problem just lingered and it generated into different problems. And the Eagles are, you know, and I'm sure you guys are probably, anybody that's probably listening, I'm sure you guys have probably done this, but you know when a light comes on in your car, right? Whether it's an engine light, right? Or battery light, whatever, right? You know when a flashing light comes onto your car and it's basically indicating, like, hey, something's wrong with your car, you should go get it checked out. And, you know, some of us are like, that's okay. The car still runs. It still turns on. The ignition works. The car still drives. Who cares, right? And then as you continue to drive the car and that blinking indicator is still blinking, it's still on, and it's letting you know, hey, there is a problem. You should get it checked out soon. And you just never check on it. And then from that one problem, that was probably $100, maybe $150 problem, it then turned into a $3,000 problem. And your car is in the shop for a long time, like for a period of time. Well, that was the Eagles. They were that car. That one indicator came on, and hey, maybe it was just a simple, I don't know, simple oil change or some, you know, a simple fix. Maybe the brakes, you know, I don't know. But you know how you get that one indication, and who knows? It's probably $100. It probably costs $100 to fix. But we become so naive. We just continue to drive the car. And it turns on, and it still works, and it's like, okay, we're good. We're good. But then the indicator never goes away. The problem never goes away. And then from a $100 problem, it turns into $500 to $2,000 to $3,000. Like, you know, and that was the Eagles. Their problem on defense and their secondary it started to become a domino effect. It messed up their locker room. AJ Brown, he'd had his own thing going on. Then offensively, they became, like, offensively to start the season, they were okay. Still some tweaks that needed to be made, but then their offense progressively got worse as the season went on. And you're asking yourself, well, what is happening? Brian Johnson, what is happening? Then Jalen Hurts, he just wasn't the same Jalen Hurts we were accustomed to seeing last year. So that one problem in their secondary became their biggest problem, and that was a red flag. But then also, it led to lingering issues. It became bigger issues at hand, and this is the result. You get a wild card exit, right? And I will say this. Nick Sirianni, I think his job, I think he's very much on the hot seat. Now, there's some people that have said, hey, Nick Sirianni, the big question with Nick Sirianni is, what does he do, right? He is technically a quote-unquote, he is a CEO coach. What does he do, right? Last year, the Eagles had Shane Steichen, offense coordinator, who I think was a big, big instrumental part of Jalen Hurts improving in the way in which he had, in which he did. And obviously, Jonathan Gannon was the defensive coordinator for the Eagles. Both of those guys left and got new jobs. Nick Sirianni, Brian Johnson was the offense. He's the offense coordinator for the Eagles. He just doesn't have it. He's just not as talented as Shane Steichen. I'm sorry. Just not as innovative, not as creative. He just does not have it. Just does not have it. And he could not find an answer this year to any of the Eagles' problems. Obviously, as I stated, we all know about the Eagles' defensive issues. It got so bad, they fired the defensive coordinator. They had to hire Matt Patricia. But even with Matt Patricia, the defensive personnel in their secondary was just not good enough. And I would say their defensive line, for all of the talent, for all of the draft capital that they have put towards their defensive line, it just was not productive enough. They have a lot of money. They've invested a lot of money, a lot of draft capital into the defensive line, and just wasn't good enough, right? So at this point, it's like, okay, Nick Sirianni, what does he do? Sirianni got the job because he was an OC, and he kind of knows offense. Like I said, their defense was hideous, but their offensive issues progressively got worse in this 7-game stretch, as I talked about, right? They went 1-6 in their last 7 games. And hey, I don't know, right? I don't know. Sirianni might not call plays, but he can give some type of directive, right? He can give hey, it was the ball game, the Bucks, they were up 16-9. You get the ball back. Why in the hell are you calling 3 pass plays? Right? Why are you calling 3 pass plays? The Eagles love screen passes. I think I forgot the exact stat, but basically the Eagles led the league in screen passes. And it's like, okay, I mean, that stuff is easy to get. Those are easy completions, but you should be running the football. And that was the thing that I thought the Eagles would rely on. With no AJ Brown, your offense is already sputtering out of control. Jalen Hurts has a hand injury. I would have thought with that offensive line and DeAndre Swift, I would have thought the Eagles would have relied and leaned on the running game. That was not the thing. They insisted on throwing the football. Their inability to lean on the run game was just absolutely horrible, because I thought that was the ingredient to helping them win this game. And not only win this game, but to look somewhat productive offensively. And the mere fact that Nick Sirianni, like I said, he may not call plays, but you can give a directive. You can have some type of influence on what direction the offense should be going in. And like I said, they continued to drop back, throw the football all night. And we're going to get to Jalen Hurts. I'm going to get to Jalen Hurts. But that just, I don't think with A.J. Brown being hurt, with your offense already not being in sync, your offensive line is one of the best qualities, the best traits, the best unit you have on your team. Why not run the football? Why not try to establish some type of running game, right? I thought this would be the game where the Eagles go back and say, hey, let's try to run the football. They didn't. They didn't at all. And here goes my thing with Jalen Hurts, because he has to get some blame here, right? He played like shit. Like, he played bad. He was just not good enough for this team to win. And not just in this game, but in the past few weeks, the past month, I would say, he just has not been good enough for this team to win at the level that they were expected to win at, or that they expected to win at. So here's the thing with Jalen Hurts. The Eagles, this team, they look really lifeless. But a lot of their success over the next coming years, looking forward, will be dependent on Jalen Hurts, right? They got some older guys that's making a lot of money. Jason Kelce is already he's already announced his retirement. That's going to be a huge loss. But also with Kelce, he's going to go down as the best center in NFL history. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's had a great, great career, spectacular career, right? They got Fletcher Cox. They got Brandon Graham. Even a guy like Darius Slay, who I think is in his mid-30s or approaching his mid-30s. They make a pretty penny, right? But they're not going to be playing forever. And Hurts is due the amount of money. I say what I say because the amount of money that the Eagles are about to pay Jalen Hurts over the span of the next 3-4-ish years, it's going to be around $150 million. So you're talking about $50 million in his cap, right? That's his what he's going to be making yearly. That's a lot, right? That's a lot. And you guys know, for my regular listeners, you guys know we get into the superficial, super geeky stuff in the offseason about some of these contracts and these quarterback contracts in particular. But over the last six games, I keep referencing the last six or seven games. Over the last six or seven games, Jalen Hurts went 5 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. And that's just not good enough, right? That's just, we know that's just not good enough at all. You know, I think he was banged up a little bit this year, but this was the same Jalen Hurts that the players voted him as the second best quarterback in the league after last year. I did not agree with that. I did not agree with that. He's not better than Josh Allen. He's not better than Joe Burrow. Let's just start it right. That's just beginning right there. There's other guys I could name and mention, but he's not better than those two guys. Like, absolutely at all. He had a really good season last year. He played really well last year. He progressed a lot last year. We saw a lot of progression and improvement, but he was not the second best quarterback. He's not the second best quarterback in football, right? So I think that was a little hyperbole. I think a lot of people were prisoners of the moment, not understanding and contextualizing some of the situation in Philadelphia last year. And we can harp back on that. Let's harp back on that. Now, obviously, Shane Steichen, the offensive coordinator, like I already mentioned earlier in this segment, I think he was a big part of Jalen Hurts' ascension as a player. I think he's a big part. I thought he was a big part of his improvement and his ascension as a player. He's no longer there. And this, by the way, this is the same Shane Steichen that was a drop pass away from having Indianapolis as a 10-win team, one less win than the Eagles. And that was with Gardner Minshew at quarterback, by the way, just to mention that. Not only that, though, with Hurts, I think people forget the Eagles had the easiest schedule last year. They had the easiest schedule in the league last year. And I'm not trying to poo-poo what they did because they won the conference. They were outright the best team. You know, I know some 49ers people might have something differently to say, right? But their path to the Super Bowl was relatively easy. Home game versus Giants, and then the 49ers, they knock out Brock Purdy, right? So it was a Brock Purdy-less, quarterback-less 49er team. That was their path to the Super Bowl. And I think people just, they just run with that. We run with that, and I think ever since Jalen has taken over the past couple of years, he's been praised for his progression. But this year, I felt like he plateaued. I think some of his stuff kind of stunted, his improvement kind of stunted. So we'll see what happens going on from now on. You know, they command a lot of money. He commands a lot of money. So we'll see what happens. But his improvement, the Eagles' success is very much dependent, and it's going to correlate with him and how he continues to evolve as a player. Because this year, he was 23 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. That is just not good enough. I never bought into the fact that he was this superstar player. I think he's a really good player. I think he's a Pro Bowl caliber guy. Never bought into the fact that he was just this elite quarterback, this superstar player. Never thought that. And he played well in the Super Bowl, and many say he outplayed Patrick Mahomes. I don't know how you can say that when literally Jalen Hurts had the turnover, he had the turnover that gave the Chiefs momentum and essentially had the Chiefs in the front seat of that game, right? Right? Like, I just don't know how you say that. Regardless, I think he's a good player, not a superstar quality player, not an elite quarterback yet. And I'm not saying he can't get there, but I think we take that one year and I think some of us become prisoners of the moment, and we forget to contextualize certain situations. Like, hey, Shane Steichen, maybe Shane Steichen's a pretty good coach, given the fact that he did help Jalen improve, and then you see what he did with Indianapolis, right? You know, looking at the Eagles and how they folded in the second half of the season, you look at their schedule from last year, you're like, yeah, they did have the easiest schedule in the league last year. This year, they were 10-1, and people point that out, but I still have my doubts. And something about the Eagles, even with them with their 10-1 record, I never felt right. Something never felt right about them. And then soon after that, they would lose to the Niners. They would lose to the Cowboys. They would lose to you know what I mean. They would lose to the Seahawks. They started to spun out of control, right? James Bradbury, he was opposing offense's best friend. James Bradbury was absolutely atrocious this year, and this happens a lot in the NFL. More, you know, this happens. This is pretty often when teams, you know, re-sign players after having a solid year, and then the following year they just can't play no more. Like that happens. And James Bradbury is a prime example of that. He was solid last year. He was a Pro Bowl caliber player last year. Pro Bowl caliber player. But from the moment he got cooked in the Super Bowl all the way up through this year, he has been a negative. He has been a liability, and every offensive coordinator, every quarterback targeting him, and they knew he was the weak link in that secondary, right? Overall, and I told you guys this a while back. I was like, overall, their defense, it just looks slow. They're not very quick. They can't tackle for nothing. Like, but James Bradbury this year was opposing offense's best friend. I mean, he was letting everybody eat. He let everybody eat and have their way. Right. If you're Philly, I don't know where you go from this point. Honestly, I think the Eagles may have more questions than the Cowboys. Right. The Eagles, they got a lot to really patch up here. And I really don't know where you go from this point. Like I said, I told you guys this before the game. I said, hey, if Nick Sirianni loses this game to the Buccaneers and Todd Bowles and Baker Mayfield, everything is on the table. Everything is on the table. Let's move on to the Bucs. And I'm going to go on to the Bucs. First of all, I know I've been pretty critical on this particular person, but Baker Mayfield, what a story. I'm genuinely happy for Baker. I was never a huge fan of Baker Mayfield, but this right here, I'm rooting for him. I've loved seeing what he's been able to do in Tampa Bay, kind of finding like a second home, winning another playoff game. He won a playoff game as the Browns quarterback versus the Steelers at Pittsburgh, and then obviously this one. Pretty good. This Bucs team, granted, I was never huge on Todd Bowles as a coach. I thought he was a great defensive coordinator, not a good coach. But shouts out to him. He got a playoff win. And this Bucs team, you look at their team. You know, look at guys like Vita Vea, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Levante David. They have players, Antoine Winfield, who's had a really good season. They have a lot of impact players at different spots. So they're not like, obviously no one had these type of expectations for the Buccaneers, but they got quality impact guys at different spots. Like Vita Vea at D-tackle, Mike Evans he's the definition of consistency. Like I said, Antoine Winfield had an all-pro caliber year. So they got some nice impact guys in different spots. And that Lions-Bucs game, both fan bases should be happy. I think that's, it's hard not to root for those type of stories. So good win for the Bucs. Let's move on. Let's move on to Lions-Rams real quick. All right, so the Lions get a big-time playoff win for not just them as a franchise, but for the entire fan base, right? The fan base has gone through so much. And I kind of have, highlighted it already earlier in this pod, but management matters in this league. This is a management league. And if that is right, and if you got that right, that's a big piece of the puzzle. And with the Lions, for years, they have been constantly bad. And this is how the NFL works. If you're bad, you get good picks, not just in the first round, but you get good picks in the second, third round, and so forth. And they've been able to pick some really good players, but management, coaching has just never for the better part of since I've been living, it's never been good. But even before me in my existence, it was just never consistent. But Lions hire Brad Holmes, who I think was the assistant GM of the Rams several years back. So he was under Les Snead and so forth. And he was instrumental in building what the Rams have now. But then, so he gets hired as the GM, as the Lions GM, right? Brad Holmes. He then hires Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell hires these coordinators that he have, Aaron Glenn, Ben Johnson. Both guys look like, really good coaching candidates. Ben Johnson's probably going to get a job, and he's probably going to be making upward of $10 million. Like that, he's a really sought-out, prominent candidate for a lot of these jobs. But then I think the trade between the Jared Goff trade was huge as well. Because if you guys remember correctly, there were two trades on the table. They wanted to cut bait with Stafford. Things just weren't going to go. They just weren't going anywhere. They wanted to cut bait with Stafford. So it was between the Niners, two first-round picks in Jimmy Garoppolo, or two first-round picks in Jared Goff. Because of the Rams' connection with Brad Holmes and the familiarity with Jared Goff, they took the two first-round picks from the Rams and Jared Goff. And it started out really slow. But the Lions have done a really good job over the past 2 years, and they have had some really, really good drafts. They've drafted really well over the past several years. And it has really culminated into this. And just recently, this past draft, I thought I commended the move a lot. They got a lot of backlash for it. But in this past draft, they went from 6th to 12th. They took Jahmyr Gibbs at 12th. And I know a lot of like media pundits and draft experts and analysts, they always say, well, you can't take a running back in the first round. And more times than not, yes. Running backs come in a dime and a dozen. But this particular draft last year, this past draft, was not that great. It just wasn't littered with first-round players, right? It just like first-round quality players. Jahmyr Gibbs was one of those few players that had a first-round grade, and he was really good. His comp, Alvin Kamara. Lions drafted him, and then at the top of the second, they drafted Sam Laporta, who turned out to be an all-pro. They also drafted Jack Campbell as well. All three, especially Gibbs and Laporta, turned out to be really impactful day one type of guys. Laporta is literally an all-pro. He's an all-pro this year. Like, he made an all-pro team this year. He was really, really awesome, really good, not just with his pass-catching abilities, but even in his run blocking. Really good. Jahmyr Gibbs, as I said, his comp is Alvin Kamara. He's literally that. He's a carbon copy, essentially. So, safe to say, Lions, they hit on those picks. And funny thing is, both of those guys had big roles in that playoff game, in that playoff win. So I say that to say, those moves, that timeline that I just went through, it essentially changed the trajectory of this franchise. Of this franchise that's just been riddled with failure, just poor, piss poor management, piss poor seasons, and they just haven't seen a winner. And with this win, it was huge. It was huge for them, right? So like I said, this is a management league, and the Lions, they got good front office and Brad Holmes. They got a good coach in Dan Campbell. Coordinators are really good, and they have a competent quarterback in Jared Goff, and they got some sweet pieces on offense. Defense is still a work in progress. And think about it. Their defense, their secondary, is not that good. Their corners, like Cam Sutton, you know, they went out in free agency. They spent a lot of money. He just hasn't panned out. He hasn't materialized into what they thought they were paying for this summer, or this offseason, I should say. Their defense, like I said, their defense is still a work in progress. And they still, for some way, still won the division. They won 12 games. They won a playoff game. And they're going to be favorite in this upcoming playoff game against the Buccaneers. And they're going to probably advance to the NFC Championship game. So this team is far from a quote-unquote finished product, I would say. They're far from a finished product. But in the spots, they're really good. They got a dominant pass rusher. Let me say, a really good pass rusher, Aiden Hutchinson. Like I said, they got some sweet pieces on offense. They've built their offensive line really well. They have an identity. The thing about Detroit is, I was always skeptical of their defense and their secondary. It's probably the weakest part of their team. But the one thing I can say is I know their identity. They're gonna be exciting. They have this mixture of being able to create explosive plays, but also run the ball and physically, like, and they're able to impose their physicality on the game because of their dominant offensive line. And it just fits the personality of Dan Campbell. So a huge, tremendous success, a huge win for the Lions and Dan Campbell in that franchise. From the Rams' perspective, as I said, I think Sean McVay in some ways did what Nick Saban did. He did his version of what Nick Saban did this year. As I said, Nick Saban, that Alabama team he had this year was an 8-win team, maybe an 8-9 win team, not a double digit win team. Saban got them to the playoff, 11-1 SEC champ. That's what Saban was able to do. Sean McVay did his own version of that in the NFL with the Rams. This Rams team, just looking at their first, they didn't have Cooper Kupp to start the season. Just looking at the schedule, you know, their defensive personnel, you know, Stafford's inability to stay healthy, this team easily could have been picking within the top 10. Easily. Like they could have easily been a 5-6 win team. That could have been their ceiling. It wasn't. They found out that they found a star in Puka Nacua. And you can't put a premium on what McVay was able to do this year. Now it does help Stafford. What for the most part, especially these past like 8 games, he's been on a tear. And it kind of shows you like, hey, he's kind of used to playing with inferior talent or he's used to playing with the second best team on the field and he can overcome some of those things. But like defensively, they were not great. They were not great. The personnel wasn't great, but they got opportune stops, opportune turnovers. They were pretty good. This Rams team turned out to be a pretty good football team. And that right there with Sean McVay, that right, you can't put a premium on that. Now, the one downside, and I think to what lost them the game, was the timeout situation. They burnt 2 second-half timeouts, and for a really good coach, a high-end coach like McVay, and for a high-end quarterback like Stafford, that's just unacceptable. Right. I think it kind of reminds me of how they lost the Ravens game earlier this year. They didn't have timeouts. So it kind of put them behind the eight ball. And the same thing happened here with the Lions. They used 2 of their timeouts in the second half and it came back to bite them in the butt. Ultimately, I think the Lions that night, they were just clicking. The Rams, they got some stops when they needed it at times. But for the most part, the Lions offensively was clicking, and the Rams' lack of defensive personnel, it kind of started to show. Their personnel and their lack of star talent in certain spots, it started to really show. So that's what it is. But I think that those timeout situations kind of hurt McVay and hurt Stafford. And ultimately, I think that's what didn't give them it put them behind the eight ball, and it was just an uphill battle from that point on, and the Lions put them away. So, big win for the Lions. Let's move on. Let's go to Miami. Look at the Dolphins and Chiefs game. We're going to talk about that really quickly. All right, so Chiefs, Dolphins. This was the least shocking outcome of the weekend. I mean, the least shocking outcome of the weekend. And I get to Kansas City because they're obviously going to Buffalo. They're going to play Buffalo. That should be a really good matchup. But the Dolphins never stood a chance in this game. And part of it, yes, they had some defensive injuries. The inclement weather didn't help. Yes, they're on the road. But ultimately, Tua was exposed and had no chance to win this game. And am I shocked? No, I'm not shocked. And when thinking about the conference, right, like thinking about the AFC conference, you have to be functional in these type of conditions. I mean, for years, Tom Brady, we praised Tom Brady for his play in inclement weather. Tom Brady's like the best cold weather quarterback ever, right? Like he's won so many inclement, cold weather, frigid type of games, right? And the funny thing is, when you look at Mahomes and the Chiefs offense, and the Chiefs offense hasn't been great this year, right? It is their weakness, right? It's something that I think some of us still question. But Mahomes looked pretty normal. It looked like the pretty normal winter day. Now, obviously, it wasn't. They was playing in below freezing temperatures, in negative temperatures, I should say. But he looked pretty normal. And in that conference, you have to be able to play in frigid conditions. right? In the NFC, it's a little different. Looking at the, you know, obviously you got teams like Philly that play outside, Green Bay that plays outside. But for the most part, I mean, hell, look at the teams that made the playoffs this year. Rams, 49ers, Cowboys, Buccaneers. You know, I mean, it's a whole bunch of either dome teams or you're in California and it's a 60-degree day, you know? You know, it's a bunch of dome teams that some teams play up north. Like, hey, hell, Detroit, they play up north, but they got a dome. Minnesota play up north, but they got a dome, right? That's just what it is in the NFC. I mean, primarily, if you look at the teams in the AFC, that's, you know, that are perennial playoff teams or that have star quarterbacks that we expect to make the playoffs, it's, you know, you look at the AFC North, it's Pittsburgh, it's Baltimore, it's Cincinnati, Cleveland, right? Kansas City, obviously, Buffalo, you know, for the Patriots for years, right? If Gerard Mayo can figure out the Patriot thing, the Patriots are another team, you know, who knows, maybe the Jets. You just look at the Broncos, right? When, like, cold, frigid conditions and temperatures. And these, like, the conference is filled with those type of, with those teams that play in places where it gets really, really cold and inclement weather is bound to happen. And ultimately, when the game was over at halftime, I felt like. At halftime, when Kansas City went up 16-7, they got a couple of Harrison Buckner field goals. I was like, yeah, it kind of felt over because it's like, it's no way with Miami's style of play, their defense, like Kansas City's defense has put the shackles on them. The one touchdown that they did have, it was Tua threw it up. It was a prayer. Tyreek Hill had to make a phenomenal catch, turning around, spinning off the defense. Like, it was a phenomenal catch, right? And for me, with the Dolphins, I was never high on the Dolphins. All year long, they struggled to beat teams with winning records. The one team that they did beat with a winning record, the Cowboys, they lost in the wild card weekend as well. So, like, I mean, big picture question is for Miami is this. You had some injuries on defense, but with Vic Fangio and the pieces that you got, you can have a formidable defense. Mike McDaniel is a proven creative play caller and head coach. So you have that checked off. You have nice weapons on the outside and Tyreek Hill and Waddle and, you know, running game and so forth. Offensively, you're fine. But you have a quarterback that essentially can't play in these conditions, and you play in a conference full of teams that play in these such conditions. Tua, and I'm not surprised. That's why I said I'm not surprised. Like, why are we shocked? Tua's from Hawaii. He played college ball at Alabama, and now he's in Miami. He's in South Beach. No one should be shocked. Oh my God, he can't, and he has an average arm. He can't play in these type of conditions. And it's like I said, watching Mahomes and watching Tua, it was like, wow, like Tua looks cold. Tua just does not look like he belongs here, in this Arctic weather. Mahomes, he looked normal. And I know we're comparing apples to oranges, like, oh my God, Mahomes is like the standard, but he is in the conference. And Josh Allen, it was cold in Buffalo. The weather was so bad in Buffalo, they had to delay the game. Josh Allen still looked really good, right? Like, these quarterbacks have been able to show that they can play in these predicaments. So Tua, for most of his life, all of his life, he's played in warm weather conditions or places that are really warm. And he has an average arm. He's going into his fifth year, and all of his counterparts have been paid, like Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert. Those guys have all been paid by their third year. Dolphins haven't paid Tua. So, you know, the offseason is approaching, draft season is approaching. What happens when Tua's agents and representations call Miami and they ask for, you know, contract extension, and it's around 180, 200. It's around that 180 to 200 ballpark. What do you do? Because you have to ask yourself, how in the hell are you beating these guys? How is your quarterback, who has an average arm, who is a warm weather kid, never has succeeded in these type of conditions, how are you supposed to win? How do you match up versus Josh Allen in Buffalo? How do you match up with Cincinnati and Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, Kansas City and Mahomes? How do you overcome that? How do you overcome that? And that is the Dolphins' big question mark. I can pay you, hey, you know, I can pay Tua $25 to $30 million a year, but $40, $50, $55 million per year? You got to ask yourself, how does he line up comparatively versus the $40 and $50 million guys? I think this was the least shocking outcome of the weekend, because I'm like, warm weather team who relies on explosive plays throughout the passing game. Tua, you know, and we even saw it this year with Tua in these big games, versus these notable quarterbacks, he got rather outplayed or just didn't play well at all, right? Just didn't play well at all, and it just feels like he has a ceiling, and that ceiling is being hit. You know, I think Tua is this. I'm not gonna say he's a system quarterback, but he benefits from having a really good coach, who's a really creative play caller, and he has nice weapons around him, right? And Mahomes and with Tua, his numbers look good. You know, he puts up really good numbers. Especially like I said, Miami, their schedule was littered with bad teams, and the one good team that they beat was the Cowboys, and the Cowboys ultimately folded themselves in the postseason. So you gotta ask yourself, like, hey, like, are we really gonna pay this guy $40 to $50 million, and we don't even have a chance to win these type of games? And in order to get through the AFC playoffs, you're gonna probably have to win these types of games. Because I mean, even if you want to say, hey, hypothetically, the Dolphins get the one seed, well, in order to get the one seed, you got to win your division. Bills, four straight years, they've won the division. You know, Bills with all their defensive injuries. At one point, they were 6-6, and the Bills still found a way to win a division. You ask yourself, how? Well, the Dolphins tripped up. They delivered some boo-boos, you know, towards the back end of the season, and it kept Buffalo's hopes alive. So even hypothetically, when you say, hey, what if the Dolphins get the one seed? Well, they had a really good chance to not get the one seed this year, they did actually have a good chance. They did have a chance to get the one seed, but you know what I'm saying. They had a chance to win a division and to avoid Kansas City, but they didn't. They didn't win a division. So that's still some humps and hurdles that you got to get over. But even in that game where in Miami, two seed is on the line, and Tua gets outplayed by Josh Allen. Right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, so on top of the conditions and him not being able to play in those type of conditions, but then also you factor in how does Tua look when he plays against Lamar Jackson, when he plays, you know, when he plays against these high-end caliber teams? Doesn't look good. He doesn't look good. He easily looks like the second-best quarterback on the field, and it's not even close. So that's a huge question for the Dolphins that they're going to have to answer really, really relatively soon. Next month and a half or so, soon. So, Kansas City, you know, not surprised. Like I said, they're a defensive team. They can run the football, and they have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce who can make something cook. They have to play Buffalo, And if assuming if they, you know, let's say they beat Buffalo, they have to, they would probably have to play Baltimore. In both of those games, in the event that they beat Buffalo, or in both of these games, essentially, they're gonna have to make it ugly. For Kansas City to have a chance, they're gonna have to make it ugly. They're gonna have to run the football. They're gonna have to play really good defense. Mahomes is gonna be Mahomes, right? I think it's a matter of what the receiving core looks like, what the passing game looks like. But Mahomes is going to be Mahomes. But I'm not surprised that Kansas City won in this type of fashion, because this is the type of fashion that they need to win in order to go deep in advance and ultimately repeat as Super Bowl champions. Do I think they do that? I don't. I'm not so confident about them going to Buffalo this week. I could see them winning that game, but I'm going to save my predictions for later in the week, but I'm not surprised. And if they do, they're going to have to muddy up the game and make it ugly, but not surprised that the Chiefs walked away with this win. Okay. I'm gonna wrap this bad boy up soon, but, Texans walk away with the win over the Browns, 45-14. CJ Stroud, I mean, this Texans team, they have become one of the more, like, for me, enjoyable as the season has gone on. Even, you know, I watched their last season, their season finale versus the Colts. That was a really good game. Two, like, up-and-coming franchises, two young coaches. D'Amico, like I'm kind of, you know, I'm going to harp back onto it, but I mentioned it earlier in the pod. Nick Casario, what they've been able to do with how they, essentially, the Texans were the laughing stock of the league a few years back. With the Deshaun Watson stuff, they weren't good. You know, owner was under a lot of scrutiny. They were in a really bad spot, and it was a dire position, and it just didn't look good. Future didn't look bright. Now. The very similar to the Lions, that Deshaun Watson trade has been really incentivizing. It's been really it's worked. It's paid off. Watson obviously got what he wanted out of Houston. He got a new contract. Houston dodged that bullet, drafted another quarterback, drafted Will Anderson, drafted Tank. Like these pieces that Houston has drafted, like. But from Derek Stingley to Will Anderson to C.J. Stroud to Tank Dell, Nico Collins, they have a really good young nucleus. You know, who knows? I think, you know, going into Baltimore this week, they're playing with house money. Like, no one expects them to beat Baltimore. These two teams actually play in the regular season. Obviously, you can't go off of that to, you know, predict a playoff game. But it wasn't close. It was a lot to a little bit. I expected it to be a little bit closer. I think that was week one. So that was the home. That was a week one type of game. Baltimore just controlled it. But CJ didn't look bad, and I would imagine CJ is gonna play. He's gonna probably play pretty well. I just think Baltimore is overall a better team. But Bobby Slowick absolutely had his way with Cleveland's defense, right? And from a Cleveland perspective, and Jim Schwartz, DC, that's Cleveland's defensive coordinator. Cleveland, I mean, another thing about that trade with Deshaun Watson before I move on to Cleveland perspective, I should say. Houston made that pick better by beating Cleveland in the playoffs. By beating them, it made that pick better. That's the funny part. Like, they, you know, they played, and the funny part is, like, how bad is it? How great of a win? How good is it for Houston? How bad is it for Cleveland? You trade, Houston perspective, you traded away Deshaun Watson to the Cleveland Browns. You played them in the playoffs. You not only beat them, but you made that pick better, and it's their pick. From the Browns' perspective, it's not too good. And granted, I don't want to. I want to give them some props because they had a really good season, given the circumstances. But in this particular instance, it's not good because the team that you traded for Deshaun Watson, that same very team, a couple years later, in a wild card game, on the road, you lose to them. They have your picks, and you're stuck with a quarterback that you have to pay now. Basically $190 million plus over the next 3 years. Good luck. Like, good luck. Now, here's the bright side for Cleveland. Kevin Stefanski had a really good year as a coach. He overcame a lot of circumstances, a lot of things where, you know, Cleveland could have easily, and I kind of talked about it once Deshaun Watson got hurt, they could have easily fell just out of the sky, and they could have just missed the playoffs altogether. They get Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco gets really hot, but he came back down to earth, right? He came back down to earth. He had some bad throws that really put Cleveland behind the eight ball and whatever. But ultimately, this Browns team, and I've been kind of talking about it. I talked about it a few times this year. This was the year for Cleveland to make some noise and to make something shake in the postseason. This was the year. Because you look at the following years, they're going to be salary cap strapped. And they're going to be really, really just inundated and invested into Deshaun Watson, right? It's just no way around it. Like, his cap hit goes from $19 million to a whopping $64 million. That is a $43 million difference. That means they are not going to be able to afford some of these, you know, really good players on defense that they have, you know, some of these players on offense that they have. They may not be in a predicament to re-sign Amari Cooper, who's been really good for them. Yeah. Like that is the punishment, or that is the effect of, okay, you get Deshaun Watson. You think he is going to take you over the top and put you over the top because of what he did in Houston, but taking a year off. The massage stuff was just weird. That quite never went away. And then he actually, you know, started to get a groove, but he gets hurt. With that, the Cleveland thing is really peculiar and weird. It's weird. They got some good foundational pieces like Chubb. Hopefully Chubb can come back and bounce back from his injury. Obviously Myles Garrett on the defensive side. But Denzel Ward, he's pretty good. But man, I think you look at the Browns, you know, season, it was really good. It was a success. It was definitely a success, and they overachieved. But man, you just look at the future and it may not look as bright because they're going to be so salary cap strapped and dependent and inundated to Deshaun Watson. Like that is just, that's going to be a killer. You owe him $64 million over the next 3 years. That's brutal. Is it three or four? I think it's three. Got to look at it. But his cap pick goes from basically $19, $20 million to $60 million, $64 million over the next few years, no matter how you look at it, right? So they're stuck with that. Houston, young quarterback, rookie deal. They're only going to get better, I assume. It's going to be a little weird when Kevin Stefanski wins Coach of the Year. I think he's the betting favorite. And it's going to be a little weird for D'Amico Ryans because he had a really good coaching year as well as a first-year coach, and he beat Kevin Stefanski in the playoffs. It's going to be a little weird when Kevin Stefanski receives that award, but, you know, got to give the Browns something, right? But Steelers, Bills. Not surprised here. Pittsburgh did play Buffalo tough, right? I kind of figured they would play Buffalo tough, but ideally, realistically, I knew Pittsburgh had no chance of winning this game. Unless Josh Allen, you know, I kind of laid out the scenario. Josh Allen has a couple, you know, head-scratching turnovers, and Pittsburgh is able to run the ball really, really effectively and have their way. I thought that was the only way for them to win versus Buffalo. I kind of figured that would not happen. Josh Allen actually played mistake-free football, didn't have a turnover. You know, Steelers, you know, this is who they've been over the past half decade or so, a little more than half decade. I mean, this is who they've been. They have been a team that, you know, really good defense, you can hang your hat on. But ultimately, their playoff ceiling is limited and it's to a halt because offensively, whether it's the quarterback spot, you just don't know what you're getting. Latter part of the years, Big Ben kind of aged poorly, didn't end well. Then, you know, they're in this transitional period where, you know, they're kind of stuck with Kenny Pickett. Not really, but, you know, they're going to probably ride it out with him because he's a Pittsburgh guy, blase, blase. And he gets hurt, so they're just going through quarterbacks. Mason Rudolph, I knew he had no chance of winning this game on God's green earth. So, that's that with Pittsburgh. We'll see what happens with Tomlin. I think he's going to probably stay. I don't know. That, you know, I don't know. Buffalo, on the other hand, as I told you guys, I think like a month now. It's been like a month ago. This team is scary. This team is really, really scary. If you're Baltimore, if you're Kansas City, watch out because this team is really scary. And this is what I mean. Sean McDermott, for instance. Sean McDermott, his defense goes down, you know, got moved off of Leslie Frazier, got some injuries on the defense. Defense playing, turns it around midseason. They make a trade for Rasul Douglas, and the defense, I mean, from that point on, Rasul Douglas has been a big part of what they do. And from going from 6-6, playoff chances looking really dim and slim, they now find themselves one win away from being back in the AFC Championship game. And they're probably going to be favorite versus Kansas City at home, right? They're going to have Bills Mafia with them. That is what I'm talking about. Sean McDermott, Bills could have easily laid down. Miami had a comfortable lead. They could have easily laid down. Bills played really well. Josh Allen played really well. I like this Bills team. I like what they've been doing and what I've been seeing, honestly, over the past month and a half. They've been playing some really excellent football. And essentially every game since, like I said, from the point they were 6-6, every game has essentially been a playoff game, right? Because if they lose, they would have lost. Their hopes of making it to the playoffs and nevertheless being a 2 seed would have been really, really slim, right? But they found themselves in a 2 seed, and now, like I said, they're 1 win away from being back in the AFC Championship game, which ultimately they wanted to get back to. So, you know, we'll see what happens with Kansas City Buffalo. Like I said, I'm dedicating another episode to my predictions for that, for divisional weekend. But Buffalo look really good. I like them. I like them a lot. And I've been saying it for a month and a half. I think they're clicking. They're finding their groove at the right time. And what better year to do it when Kansas City isn't at their best, at their peak, right? So yeah, we'll see what happens. But without further ado, I let you guys go. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. This is wild card weekend, review, reaction, whatever you want to call it. Like I said, I dedicate another episode later on. Before divisional weekend, to give you guys my thoughts and predictions, and we'll be running it back again the same time. But always remember two choices, one decision. I'm out. Peace, deuces, I'm gone.